Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing a wide range of research projects in which our academics are currently involved. With me in the studio today is Professor Richard Muscat from the Department of Physiology and Biochemistry in the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery here at the University. He's also Pro-Rector for Research and Innovation. Professor Muscat holds a BSc Honours from the University of Liverpool, an MSc and a PhD from the University of London. He's best known here in Malta for his work as a neuroscientist and has been quite deeply involved in research into illegal drugs and their effects on the brain. He has also been able to bridge the gap between science and the arts through a project entitled EMAPS, which he has been working on with Professor John Schranz. This multifaceted project, in very simple language, deals with what happens in the brain when actors perform. I suspect that's a rather reductive description, but perhaps we shall hear about the project later on in the programme. Welcome, Professor Muscat. In preparation for this interview, I set about trying to find some definitions of research, because I feel it is a word that is used and rather abused, and which has come to mean different things to different groups of users. Sometimes it's rather loosely used in the sense of doing a review rather than research. So when is research research? One asks oneself. A definition I found was research is a kind of activity based on intellectual investigation and has a purpose of discovering, interpreting, and revising human knowledge on various aspects of life. Somewhere else, research was defined as an organized and systematic way of finding answers to questions. These definitions both seem valid, but perhaps one should delve a little deeper and also define the key words in that last sentence, you know, organized, systematic, finding answers and questions. Within an academic context, how would you describe academic research yourself?
Absolutely right, yeah. I mean, most people now use the word research, and the word is bandied about quite often from requiring some information that you need to have. So if I'm asked, how do I go and look up for a loan? I go and do some research, sit on the internet, find out what types of things are available from banks, mortgage houses, etc. But what we're talking about here is what about the research at an academic institution. I think both your definitions would seem to fit the bill quite clearly. Intellectual investigation, but I think the key one is revising human knowledge. I mean, if you're going to go away and either do some research, in, if you happen to be in the Department of Languages, the Department of History, I mean, I think you're going to sit down and maybe write up an article that is going to be well-researched and might change the way we perceive history to have taken place over a particular type of, you know, over certain years, and is published in a journal, which means it's peer-reviewed, etc. In the sciences, we do the same thing, with the exception now is that we use a laboratory through which we operationalize our theories to get at to find some answers through which then we can change the theory and adjust it accordingly. So the methods used maybe are different, but I think it is the revision of human knowledge that's the key one here.
You're going to be looking always into what has gone before you in an effort then to see how that might be moved forward. People talk about original research.
The previous people or previous investigators, you always just stand on the shoulders of giants. It's always wonderful to give the impression that, you know, like Archimedes, eureka, you discover something that had, you know, no precedent before. It's there, but I mean, you've built on that particular knowledge, you've adapted that particular knowledge, and come up with probably a different way of looking at a particular problem. And by doing that, you revise the way in which human knowledge then is passed on to the next generation, etc.
You just mentioned this rather vexed question of the difference between the definition of scientific research and perhaps other academic research in the areas of art, literature, history, the social sciences. Scientific research is supposed to be based on theories, observations, replicable experiments, hypotheses, whilst the historical research perhaps is more based on comparative methods, statistics, structural analysis, and the like. Do you see these as the differences between scientific and historic research methods?
It's the methods used to do the research that are different, but I think they're both academic research, and they both are of equal value. They're both then judged by their peers in scientific journals or journals in the arts. So I think, basically they're both, valid, because what they're trying to do, again, is revise human knowledge. But it's the means through which one conducts the research is slightly different. And sometimes people say, it's easier to do maybe historic-based research because you don't have, you don't need to be in a laboratory. That's true in a certain sense that, for me, for example, I know that I have to come to university if I'm going to do the type of research that I do, that I have to go into the laboratory. And the other thing is then I have to have a laboratory that has particular pieces of equipment, so then there's other implications of funding, etc. There's just a different means through which one does academic research.
And how does one really become a researcher? I mean, here in the university we have undergraduates who are doing research work for their dissertations at undergraduate level. Mm-hmm. We have postgraduate students. Mm-hmm. Then we have people who choose to try to move on in academe and perhaps go on to do further studies, doctoral studies, perhaps abroad. When do you become a researcher?
I don't think there's the magic switch that all of a sudden makes one a researcher. I think when one is young, one is maybe fascinated about particular things. What fascinated me as a kid was reading C.P. Snow's books. And all of a sudden that told me, all right, what is it that I want to do? I said, okay, I'm interested in biology. I'm interested in how the body works. But what part? And then all of a sudden that develops as you go along. So you then, your choices at school start bending towards those types of interests. Then you end up doing your A-levels. Again, it's bent towards that type of interest. But then I was interested in, maybe how does this thing called your brain works? But at A-level, you get very little of that. And even when I did my undergraduate degree, my physiology I did in Liverpool, I got a taster of what that might be. And that then, gave me the idea, maybe I should do a master's before I do a PhD and see, combine maybe some neurophysiology and some psychology and see what that's, all about. I did that. And once I did that, then I said, okay, I'm interested in looking at a particular aspect of how the brain works. I'm interested in pleasure, which I thought that should be, why is it that we do certain things and we like doing certain things? And that gave me then the access to do my PhD. But once I'd done my PhD, and doing this in the UK, I realized that I needed to take it a step further and got a position, a postdoctoral position, and did a postdoctoral position for 3 or 4 years before saying, okay, now I really need to think of, what is it, where am I going to go? Do I go into industry or do I, remain as an academic? And that's a difficult decision to make. For example, I went to Glaxo, the pharmaceutical company, 3 times. I went to 3 different interviews at 3 different times. And then I decided academia is for me. So I think you can do research in industry, you can do research in university. But I find that, to me, the research in university was an interesting one because you can do your teaching and do your research. And that's the difference, my feeling, is between a university of top repute, is it's got a number of researchers who then provide, by doing research, the students then really reap the benefits. Because I can lecture about, to my medical students about basically a particular problem in the brain, for example, with Parkinson's disease. I can have the basic textbook that tells me, look, this is what goes wrong in this particular condition. But by doing the research in that particular area and reading up and what is going on in that particular area, the lecture becomes a bit more interesting. This is the target areas of the research at this present moment in time. And this is probably, if these things work out well, we're going to be the treatments in 4 or 5 or 10 years' time. And you as young doctors should be aware that this is where things are going, because when you do become doctors, these are the things that are going to be available. So research really does inform your teaching and provide you with a, rather than a strict A-level syllabus in which this is what needs to be done, this is what needs to be understood, and that's it. But each has its, you know, place in the your development, the education.
Exactly. I think this is the beauty of a university, in fact, as opposed to a research institute only. Obviously, I know there are many researchers who would love to be just doing research all the time, but the contact with the students is something that can be very stimulating.
I agree that one model, as you mentioned here, is being in a university through which the students actually benefit from the fact that you conduct research. At the same time, the institute model of research is interesting per se as well, is that it gives you a bit more time to really get into depth with what it is you're up to. But at the same time, there in these types of institutes, it's the master's students and the PhD students and the postdoctoral students that you interact with, and then rather than having lectures as an undergraduate, there are seminars, slots. So I think probably here at the university, we're going to start to need one or two of these centers of excellence in the next coming years if we are going to make the leap through which that we're able to compete more effectively in maybe the world of literature, the world of, you know, history, the world of science, etc.
I've been interviewing various academics over the last months, and I've sort of tried to identify certain leitmotifs that sort of run through the various projects. And the projects have been extremely diverse, from chemistry to social sciences to history to everything. Even, for example, quite a few projects which have involved creating courses which might prima facie not seem to be research. But in actual fact, the work that goes into creating that course, as you well know from your own experience, does involve an awful lot of preparatory work, preparatory research. So there are definitely research aspects, even in certain things which may not immediately seem to be research-based. What has been a strong leitmotif has been the networking aspect. Mm-hmm. And this has really shown me, anyway, in my ignorance, really, that, you know, without others involved, we're not going to, not in today's research world, you're not going to get very far.
I think this is like most other, especially from my domain with doing science. Normally, your expertise is so refined looking at a particular aspect. I mean, especially, for example, the brain. Yeah, there's so many things that you can be doing. And so it's only natural that you have contacts, A, with probably the labs abroad that you've worked in before when you're doing your training, and those contacts never go away. And, or with other people who are doing, you know, other research in different parts of the world where you see, that's interesting, if this piece of information was used in that particular context, which is a slightly different context, then maybe I could come up with, or maybe have a better answer to the question I'm looking at. So the fact that then you do have conferences, and this is, one or two conferences you go to every year, you meet the people in the particular field, and they ask you, all right, this is a good idea, maybe shall we put in for an EU grant at this particular thing, or shall we do a master's program through which this type of work can filter now through into the universities at master's level, because otherwise it wouldn't. And so networking now becomes one of the natural implicit things that a researcher does.
Before we move on to talk a little bit about this funding which we've touched on, I'd like to remind listeners that this is Research Matters, and I'm Patricia Camilleri, and today I'm speaking to Professor Richard Muscat here. He is pro-rector here at the University for Research and Innovation. What do you think are the main problems, Professor, that face any person who wishes to embark on a research project?
I wouldn't be, I think the glass is half full, not half empty, so I wouldn't look at it as problems. I'd say hurdles.
Challenges?
And challenges. I think first and foremost, you have to be totally determined that you want to take this path on. Then you have to realize that at the moment, research careers are not, you have to think, you're going to think ahead. The salaries are not fantastic, the salaries are not poor. you know, but Sally does come into it. The other thing is, where do you want to do research? You want to do research in the type of research institution you mentioned before, you want to do it in the university, or you want to do it, you know, in industry. If you want to do it here at the university, there are a number of opportunities. And over the past couple of years, there's the university postgraduate committee that actually, you know, funds individuals to complete their PhDs. The research fund committee that actually provides funds, seed money, let's not pretend the money is of the order that you might see with EU funds, but at least it is seed money to get people up and running. And there are opportunities with the Government Scholarship Fund, which has been running pretty successfully over the last couple of years. And there are going to be other funds, I think, coming down the pipeline with European structural funds that maybe we talk about later, that will be available for Malta, for people to embark on careers of research by doing either master's or PhD programs. So there are a number of, you know, because funding is always an issue, of new funding ways through which you will be able to do that. But once you start doing research, then you need to think about it. Yeah, this is going to be with me for the rest of my life, and the main hassle of doing research is I'm always going to be chasing for funds. And that, if you accept that in the beginning, you know, from the word go, when you first, you know, embark on this type of thing, then I think you realize where you stand.
I think that problem or that challenge can be sort of attributed to or has to be understood by the university itself, not just the individual researcher as well.
And it's nice that the individual researcher makes an attempt to see or obtain funds himself or herself beforehand. And then the university can say, okay, fine, you've managed to do that already. Right, if you need anything extra, let's see what it is that you need. Okay, we can add this on top. Rather than just expecting, basically, the little present, a little nice big check to drop in front of you and say, right, there's those, the money's there, go away. And because that, you know, life is not like that. And life in research is certainly not like that.
Why is it so important for Malta to be in the research loop? I mean, how can we, I'm being a bit polemic here, how can we compete, compare, or even cope with the kind of work that's going on abroad, really?
Let's be honest. We're an island of 400,000 people and have done pretty well so far. There's always been a bit of research trickling through the system at university, but many of graduates here, or many people who are born here, who have gone away and ended up in academia, have done pretty well in research. I remember seeing some other program on TV a couple of weeks ago where they're interviewing someone from London, etc., who's doing a particular research project on cancer, you know. So people do pretty well when they do it. So my feeling is why can't we keep these people here? Yeah? Provide the resources. Okay, choose our priorities, because we cannot exactly have, you know, a nuclear physics institute, you know, etc. or whatever. But choose what it is that we're, you know, maybe we're pretty good at and do it, provide the resources, and get on with it. Because the fundamental thing at the end of the day is the human resource. If you don't have that, you can have the best equipped laboratory, but nothing's going to come out of it.
If you were able to write a little wish list for the government, really, because I mean, this is, after all, a state university, it's a public university. So what would the priorities be on your wish list?
As I was just mentioning now, I would ask if I was the government, I'd ask the government. I wouldn't ask the government for money as such, but what I would say is, okay, choose one or two directions you'd like to go in, which are based on the expertise of the university that will give Malta some stamp and push that as a centre of excellence or whatever. Now, it's not a question of just the money. It must be a five-year programme that will employ postdocs, PhD students, master's students, and the professors. Provide that environment, that ambience, and then I think those things will take off. And then they'll start getting the funds themselves from EU, from the outside, maybe from the EU, etc., and be able to get going. But providing that sort of seed money with the resources with a particular concept in mind and a strategy over 5 years, my feeling is, because I know we have the people to do this sort of thing, by just previously, there are people all over the world who are Maltese, have gone and done pretty well, because the resources around them enable them to flourish. So can't we do this at home?
That brings me on to a definition of research that I came across, which said, research is original investigation undertaken in order to gain knowledge and understanding, and includes work of direct relevance to the needs of commerce, industries, the public and voluntary sectors, the invention of generation of ideas, images, performances. So when you're talking about research in any area, does research have to be directed to an application?
I would say at the end, it always is. But depending on the on a line of continuum, you might be, for example, someone's been working in a laboratory, been looking at a particular molecule and been studying this molecule for a number of years, and all of a sudden, in a particular moment, in a particular context, discovers that this thing works on a cell in a particular way. And then realizes, there's a particular disease that is caused by a malfunction of this particular pathway where this molecule happens to be missing. So I happen to be working on this for a number of different years, probably using it in a different framework, in a different context. But now it's become relevant. Do I go to the pharmaceutical company? Do I go to the IP department of the university, which needs to be developed, by the way, and, get this thing on the market and becomes applied? But otherwise, or sometimes, I could be doing research and just looking at a particular aspect, but that might not have direct relevance to start off with, but later on it will do. All research in my understanding at the end of the day does come out. The other thing is, there's always an application, but there's always the point as well that it might not be commercialized, because the commercial market is very different from the research market. I may have something to sell, but maybe the commercial world decides, no, we're not going to produce this particular thing at this moment in time. It doesn't pay us, for reasons of maybe because it uses fuel or whatever to make, or it's not the appropriate moment for that, even though it would sell. So saying that all research should be applied forgets this other aspect. To apply it, it has to be commercialized. The commercial market, at the moment, it's not exactly the best time to go out and say, and say, go to a bank, for example, and say, can I have some funds to do this or that?
And the funding, EU funding is sort of variously looked upon as, or talked about as a milch cow or as a lifesaver. Or else as an insuperable hurdle sometimes, because it's so difficult to get. Perhaps it's a bit all of those things. What are your feelings? Are you ambivalent about EU funding or enthusiastic about it?
I'm enthusiastic about EU funding because I remember years ago, before we were going to join the EU, and when we were asked that we had to pay our way. And I remember the government saying, hold on a minute, this is quite a bit of money to put in. And it was of the order of £1 million then, all it is. And the government said, look, come on. And we really had to lobby there. And the government didn't believe that we'd get these funds back again. But the proof of the pudding was that once, the £1 million was put in, the number of researchers here at the university managed to practically triple or quadruple the monies that came back into the university. So, it did work. The problem that I see now is that my understanding is that EU funding should be added value in that, for example, I have a laboratory that is looking at a particular question and trying to get some answers using particular techniques. There's another laboratory in France or in Germany that are asking the same question but using different techniques. If we combine capabilities, probably a better chance of getting an answer than if I did mine independently. So EU money is the way through which these different laboratories are able to share their expertise at using probably different methodologies, because to get an answer to that particular question. Now here we use those monies basically like our monies to keep everything up and running. So the ratio normally would be, just to say, for example, that internal money is around 80% and 20% is EU. We've turned that upside down.
Inevitably, I think things will sort of develop and change and over the years. You start off doing something one way, and then circumstances change, and you end up doing it in a different way. The funds that we are benefiting from also include the ESF funds and the ERDF funds, which we've talked about a lot. But you know, perhaps one could explain very, very briefly what those are.
I mean, ESF is the European Social Fund, and the ERDF is European Regional Development Fund. It's like two different funds. I mean, the structural funds are responsible for capacity building, training. So absolutely fantastic to get those monies, you know, for training opportunities for university staff. The others are infrastructural funds. So this is, to me, has been my dream, because managing to obtain those funds has provided us with the ability to upgrade I'm being a bit biased here, the scientific laboratories, but it's also enabled us to put in, hopefully, a brand new ICT building. It's also going to enable us to have the computer services center upgraded, up and running. And so I think without these funds at this moment in time, I think we'd be at a loss, because we're now able to upgrade the laboratories, and therefore that gives us more opportunity to apply for funds externally. So my next wish on the wish list is that we get our own research funds and research structures organized and resources to be in a position where, as you say, it's become a center of excellence in a number of different areas. And then, yes, Malta can compete.
Thank you so much, Professor Richard Muscat, for coming to talk to us today about research here in the University of Malta and in Malta in general. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
If you would like further details about the University of Malta's research projects or any other information, please access our website at www.um.edu.mt. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.